Okay, so today we're going to pick up with the following sugya in Tefillas HaShachar, which appears, it's source sheet number 6, Tefillas HaShachar number 6, Avot versus Tamidim. It's the Gemara on Daf Chavav Amud Beis, but I reproduce the Gemara on the source sheet as well, so you can take a look at that as well. So this is one of the foundational and better known Gemaras in Per Tefillas HaShachar. So what we do is read through the sugya and then examine a couple of key points that emerge, and we'll go from there. So the Gemara says as follows: Itmar.
All to the government of the Rabbi Horn's office.
Itmar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Amar Tefillas Avos Tiknum Rabbi Shua Ben Levi Amar Tefillas Keneged Tamidin Tiknum. So these are the two classic opposing positions. Already from the get-go of the Gemara, it's fascinating to note that we see two competing views, and yet, when we analyze it, they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. This is a far cry from an Asur Mutar kind of machloket, or a Tamei Tahor. Tefillat Avot Tiknum and Tefillat Keneged Tamidin Tiknum. One wonders if those are completely opposing categories or ideas. Now, historically, they are different. In other words, if the avot were mesakin, and that becomes binding for us, versus on the basis of the karbanos, particularly the karbanos of the Beis HaMikdash, so then historically, and then in terms of the meaning that each one is respectively laden with, obviously they mean different ideas, but you already wonder from the get-go if these are completely incompatible notions, both halachically and, as we'll explore a little bit later, hashkafically as well. In the meantime, the Gemara accepts that these are differing positions, and the Gemara continues. The Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Each position has a brisa that is marshaled in support of its respective view. Tanik Vasid Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, in support of the Tfilot Avot Tiknum position. We know that the brisa teaches us that Avram Tikin Tfilah Shachar Shem Rabbi Yeshkim Avraham Ba Boker Il Hamakom Asher Amad Sham Ve'ina Mida Elot Tfilah Shneemar Ve'amod Pinchas Vayifalel. Famous scene of Avraham getting up early to daven on behalf of the residents of Sodom. Yitzchak kikin tfilas mincha shneemar v'yitzei Yitzchak latsuach basadeh lifnos oreh v'in sichal tfilas shneemar tfilah le'aniki atof lifnei Hashem yishpoch sichal. Yaakov tikin tfilas arve shneemar v'yifka b'makom v'yelen sham v'in pigi'ah ela tfilas shneemar v'yatal tisbal be'ata amazev yatisal ba'adam rina u'tfilah v'yal tifka b'im. So Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, a citation in favor of each. And so this lends itself to the position that Tfilos Avos Tiknun. Now just to be clear, this is not exactly Tfilos Avos Tiknun, right? In other words, what?
It's not the Doros.
Right. Each one davened. So that's a point that already needs to be made, and there's a clear sense as to how the other view, namely that Atios Kneged Tzmidin Tiknum, might respond. And we're going to see many echoes of this among the Rishonim and Achronim as well. So stay tuned for more on that. That the limbs that remain from the carbon tamid shel bein harbayim could theoretically be offered on the mizbeach all night long. As an aside, it's interesting to note as well that differs from the primary avodot of the korban. We know that with regard to certainly the tamid shel shachar and tamid shel bein harbayim, we're presumably talking about the four primary avodot of the korban. Here we're talking about not zrika, Kabal Sadam, Holacha, and Zrikat Hadam, the four primary avodah, but rather we're talking about the Akhtara, which is not Me'aki, but the Kapara, which takes place at a later hour, and that's going to be relevant for Tfilas Arvis moving forward as well. Also, the language of Tfilas Arev in Lakeva is one that's important we're going to have to get back to as well, and we'll figure into Sugya we'll touch on now and then have to elaborate moving forward, namely the Sugya of Tfilas Arvis Rishos. Mark continues, "Mei pneimam mushal tmusaf and kol yom shei kavur shal musaf and karv kol yom." Rabbi Yehuda Omer ad sheva shaos, shei kavur musaf karv holich ad sheva shaos. Ve'izohi mincha gedola misheishal sumechza ulamala. But that's defined as 6.5 hours into the day. Ve'izohi mincha ketana mitisha shaos sumechza ulamala. Mincha ketana is defined as 9.5 hours into the day. Then the Gemara poses a query, ibayelahu, as we say, right? It's not an attack question; it's rather
Inquiry.
Right? Inquiry question. An inquiry. That's of course an inquiry question is of course redundant, but that's okay. It's an inquiry, as you say correctly. Vayelu Rav Yehuda plag mincha kama ka'amar plag mincha achrona ka'amar, which let's assume means the question is he? It's actually a little bit unclear. He's talking about from he may be talking about from mincha gdola to mincha ktana or from mincha ktana and dan. And then the Gemara answers, Tashma, Desani, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Plaga Mincha, Achrona Amru, Vihi, Yudal Shos, Chaser Revia. So it actually means 4:45, not at the end of, let's say, the period from 12:30 to 3:30 or something along those lines. Okay, so this is all marshaled as one long brisa in favor of the position of Tvilos Keneged Tzmidin Tiknun. Pretty straightforward. Raya, each one, the details, we may argue, the Tanai may dispute the details with regards to the Karbanos, but the carryover from the Karbanos on the one hand to the Tzvilot on the other is crystal clear and is unanimous that that principle is accepted by all Tanaim in this particular Raya. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina. Note, the Gemara does not ask the other way around. Remember, the Gemara offered evidence in both directions. There's a glaring problem in the structure of the Sugya in that the Gemara doesn't ask the other way. The Gemara only says, right, that the Raya, the proof text for the position Tvilos Avot Tiknum is posed as a problem for the position of Tvilos Avot Tiknum. The other way around, the Gemara does not ask from the whole Braita about Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. Presumably, number of the Achronim suggest it's for the reason that we mentioned earlier, which is that the strength of that proof is really not nearly the same. It's almost as if to say that is consistent, or that would be the basis for the position of Tvilos Avot Tiknum, but it wouldn't necessarily be a full-fledged proof. In its favor, and that's perhaps why the Gemara only asks the question one way, not the other. But this, just structurally in the sugya, is a glaring point, an important one. In any case, the Gemara says, no, it's not going to be a proof from Malach of Yosef Rechanina. Lo'olam imalach tilos avos tiknum v'yasmechinhu Rabbanan Akarbanos, a very famous line, that really was the forefathers who established the tefillot, and nevertheless the rabbis came along later on and they leaned it, the details, let's say, or the category, upon Karbanos. We'll have to return to this and understand it a little bit more fully. And then the Gemara brings the proof to Ilo Tei Mahachi, that even the view of Tefillos Avos Tiknum must necessarily accept that to some extent tefillot are based upon Korbanot, right? That we have to accept that the Tefillos Musaf Rabbi Yosef Yechanina Man Tikna. Right? Was it Avram? Was it Yitzchak? Was it Yaakov? Was it one of the Imahot? Right? Okay. Right? There's a novel right there in the making. So the right. So the Gemara says, "What's the proof?" So the Gemara says, "Rather, Elo Tfilos Avos Tiknum V'Yasmechinhu Rabbanan Akorbanos." A very famous Gemara, and a sort of a very basic, classic back and forth Shaklavatarya with a whole range of questions that we've already begun to touch on. So what I'd like to do is to analyze the Gemara in the following way. First, to just focus on the balance between Avos and Karbanos. Number one, to understand the meaning of each position, in particular the Gemara's proposed hybrid position of Tilos Avos Tiknum V'Yasmechinhu Rabbanan Karbanos, especially. Number two, once we understand what are the positions in the Gemara, how do we quote unquote rule or paskin, which is right? We know that the Rambam tells us in numerous places, no less than five places, in his various commentaries, that we don't paskin on matters that are theoretical in nature. But of course, you can begin to see from the Gemara that there are concrete potential halachic ramifications to this machloket. And I would suggest as well that in terms of the philosophical underpinnings of the sugya, I think clearly there's a lot of depth to the Gemara and to the ideas here. And so it would be important to know from the position, the perspective of Aris Rishonim, how we indeed rule on this, and then in turn to consider the question as to how we actually paskin. Once we finish that, probably not today, we'll then turn to the question of the relationship between this sugya and an upcoming one, namely the sugya of Tilat Arvit Rishur. And that's going to be a separate question. In other words, just to put out the question clearly, how does this Gemara, as we say in the good old Yiddish, Mamal Lashon, has it shtim, right? How does it fit together? Right, that's not from my home. picked that up along the way somewhere.
I picked that up in Landers.
I picked that up in the YA based Medrash.
Reinforce it from the FYA.
Okay. Vas mechinho. Okay. So then the next question turns to the relation between this and the Sugya Tfilat Arvit Rishut. In other words, when the Gemara says Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, there does not seem to be a distinction, right? Avram is Abish one, Yitzchak another, and then Yaakov the final one, right? If I would just read this right on the face of it, you don't get a sense that there's any distinction whatsoever. And if I were to ask, where does Yaakov rank among the Avod, I'd probably say, right? He's not too shabby. So the notion that, well, it's just because it was Yaakov, therefore it's just Rishon. What do we have against Yaakov, you know? What's up with that? So is this sugya specifically according to the view of Tefillat Arvit Chova? Why is it that we might say that Tefillat Arvit Rishon? And that'll sort of be a transitional point that'll help us to tackle that sugya when it comes up in about a daf's time on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Bet. So we're going to see a few sugyot before that, but that's going to be, in terms of our in sugyot coming up, it's in the not too far distance. Okay, so first of all, what exactly does this position mean, this sort of hybrid or compromise view? How do we understand it? So I think if you think about it conceptually, I think that there are two possibilities, and we'll see this beginning to emerge from the Rishonim. Just to sort of start the conversation, take a look at the Ritva, source 2 on the source sheet. And this is right here on the spot. So the Ritva writes that Perush Vada Avos Tiknam. What does this mean? So certainly Avos were misaki in each of these respected tefillot. Because of their takana, we would not have been obligated to recite these tefillot. The Asu Rabbanan v'as mechinhu akarbanos kideshihu chova. Now, first of all, this is sort of the point that we already made. In other words, the fact that Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov did so doesn't necessarily establish it as an obligation for all generations. Why would it be that the fact that Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov davened in this way is not necessarily l'dorei dora? Right. So one possibility is that. Right. All right. So I was going to say one possibility is just that. That's just not what they had in mind. In other words, they didn't attempt to be misogynistic or anything, and even had they lived at some later point in history, that wouldn't have been
davening.
The rest of it. They were just davening. Give them a break. We're just sort of peering in on that. Alternatively, as you suggested, Dani, could be that, no, the point is, even had they, or even if they in fact were mitzaken these as some sort of takanot, which might mean, I don't even know what that means, that would mean perhaps for their families, etc., that would not be l'dorei dorot. Who formulates this principle about something that is established prior to Matan Torah is not binding for Jews of all generations post Matan Torah in particular? What?
I'll assume the Rambam is the safe bet.
It's well done. It's an educated guess. Where's the Rambam? The Rambam is in Perush HaMishnah in Chulin, in context of Git HaNasheh. There is a classic, the Rambam has a classic discussion. Why in context of Git HaNasheh? Right? Right? So that's because that's the question of, right, Nitna Torah Nischad Shalacha, how do we deal with the fact that Git HaNasheh is not formulated after Matan Torah? If you take a look in the Sefer HaChinuch, where does it appear? Right? It appears prior to Matan Torah. It's one of the three mitzvot that the Chinuch lists, right? In Sefer Bereshit, right? It's just that, and it's Puruvu, Brit Milah, and Gid HaNashet. That's all of Sefer Bereshit. That's why, of course, Mechar Chinuch Avura had to go to Hilchot Shabbos, because there's such limited choice in Sefer Bereshit. Now, Puruvu is a separate discussion. Leave that aside for just a moment. I wasn't even given to Klal Yisrael, so that's just a complicated one. Brit Milah, though, right, as the Rambam, as part of the Rambam's discussion, is indeed repeated. Right, that's Parshas Tazria. So we know that is indeed repeated. And what about the Anashas? The Rambam says we must infer that this was referenced at Har Sinai, even though it doesn't appear explicitly in the Torah after that point. But there is a requirement of Nitna Torah v'Nischad Shalacha that for something to be binding for all generations, it has to be enunciated at Har Sinai. And the fact that the Avos therefore were Misakim, something wouldn't necessarily be binding for all generations. So the Ritva not 100% clear, but either way, what he is saying is that the fact that a vote would have said something or done something would not have been binding for all generations. So it's their model, and then Chazal picked up from there. The Maharsha picks up on this issue as well. And Rasul Avram Tikin, take a look there. L'kaman kamasik, excuse me, Dil Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Nam Yas Mechinu Akarbanos. Right, and as the Gemara concludes with this hybrid view, the ilo tei mahachi tivas musaf man tikna, v'tzarch lomar di itzrich leilu neimar de avos tiknum di ilav hachi lo havu tiknos tfilo tiknu tfilos klal. Right, Gamosav neged karbanos v'lo shetiknu heim seder yudches brachos. V'habi avnen iskanal al seder. Ela demi avos lemanu shetzarach la'adam le'espalo gimel tfilos b'chol yom. L'kayim ha'shenema arev avokar v'tzarayim asicha v'gomer. And so on and so forth. Right, so what's the Maharsha saying? Right, along similar lines, right? The Maharsha says, again, right, that, right, except he's adding one more point. In other words, what he's saying is like this. It's not so much, right, it might well be, it could well be that he agrees with the Ritva, but he's focusing on sort of a different aspect of the discussion. Whereas what the Maharsha is saying here is that it's true that the force, the halachic obligation of tefillah stems from where?
Korbanos.
Right.
But the concept of tefillah predated Korbanos.
Exactly. So much, and not Yurche Bracha, that was much later, but some sort of kernel, the essential core nugget of this idea existed prior to that. And so what differentiates the view of tefillah Avel Tiknum versus Tfilot, right, versus the full-fledged purist korbanot view? The point here is that Chazal would not have been metakin tfilot at all had it not been for the precedence of the Avot. And that's really what this view holds. So the Ritva and the Maharsha, again, I don't know if they're disagreeing. The Ritva is saying that the Avot Davin, that did not generate a chovah, that rather was the takan of Chazal. And the Maharsha's contribution is he's saying the Avot Davin, Chazal looked at that model and decided, you know what? This is something we want to enshrine. Now, what does that look like? They didn't daven Shmoneh Esrei Brachot. More to the point, they didn't daven at particular times during the day. There's no structure to this. So Chazal said, you know what? Let's take the model of Korbanot and use that as, right, as sort of the basis or the foundation for crafting sort of the body, right? The details and all the sort of all the halachic nuances of the practice of tefillah, but the essential idea really comes from the Avot, and that's really what presumably Chazal were trying to capture, right? In essence, but with greater body, with greater format and structure through their takanot. Okay, now you can already start to see, right? Is Avot just sort of a backdrop? Is it just a context for the view of tefillah Avot Tiknum? V'yas mechinu rabbanon akarbanot? Or are we trying to sort of capture that? And this may go back to some of our discussions earlier. Remember the Rambam, right? What was his sort of, we'll see his view about korbanot as we go along. But the Rambam sort of trying to capture that essential, he didn't talk about the Avot in that context, but this notion that there's some aboriginal pure tefillah that Chazal then gave a framework to and they gave body and details to, this sort of, right, it's sort of reminiscent of that idea. And I think that that's really interesting as well. Now, we're going to see also a variation, and especially the Nidna Torah Ben Schad Shalacha perspective, the Gedan Asha issue, come up in context of the Rambam. I'm just going to hold off on that for now, because I'm going to contextualize it in relation to our second issue, which I'd like to begin to address now, which is, so how do we quote-unquote Paschal? And we'll circle back to this discussion as part of the Shitat HaRambam in that context in particular. So the Gemara doesn't actually clearly conclude, although the Gemara did not bring up, right, the Gemara did not say name Atavi Tziyufta, right, for one side, and only said it in favor of the view, and again, right, of Tfilot Kenega Tzmidin Tiknum. Is that decisive? On the other hand, the Gemara offers a rebuttal, and the Gemara does modify the view of Avot Tiknum, right, but it's not 100% clear how much ground is being ceded, right? And that's part of this discussion of the Ritva and the Maharsha. So is there sort of a conclusion in the sugya, or does it remain an open-ended debate? So take a look at the Rishon. It's really interesting that the Rif and the Rosh, when they codified this Gemara, the Rif and the Afid Ches Amid Aleph in the Dapei Harif, and the Rosh in Perek Aleph Halacha Simon Gimel here, they both only quote the view of Tzmidin, the Omid, the Avot view entirely. Which is really striking. You're looking at this again. The Rif and the Rosh, it's not uncommon, by the way, when the Rosh quotes a sugya from the Gemara, not his own additional views, but when he just gives you his quotation, very often I've found that the Rosh will really just take directly from the Rif and cut and paste into the Rosh's halachot. I found that to be very common. And even when the Rif has some sort of, I won't say rare, but relatively uncommon halachic excursus, or from time to time the Rif will have quote the Gaonim or some elaborate halachic discussion, the Rosh will very often draw from that as well. And the Rosh, of course, has other contributions that come from both the Balei HaTosfot as well from the later Chachmei Sfarad, the Ramban, and that whole chain of tradition, but in terms of just sort of the body of his work was sort of the starting point, I found that it's very often the Rif. So they both omit it entirely, and that seems to be their position. Now, what of the Shitas HaRamban? So it's really interesting to know that if you take a look at the Rambam, and it's on the source sheet in Perek Aleph Halacha Vav. So the Rambam here and elsewhere in Hilchot Tefillah says Korbano, Korbano, Korbano. And so far as I know, nowhere in Hilchot Tefillah does the Rambam mention anything about the Avod at all. Just omits it seemingly in its entirety. So for example, Perek Aleph Halacha Vav, V'chin Iskinu Shehe Adam Esbalat Tefillah. We've seen this at the beginning of the year. Tefillah Chas Balayla Shearei Ivarei Tzamit Shal Ben Harbayim Misakla Velchim Kal Lail Shemar Hi Ho La V'gomer Kino Shemar Erva Voker V'tzaharayim. Oh, sorry, I didn't erase the extra stuff. Excuse me. Two halachot hey and vav of Perek Aleph. Beginning of halacha hey. The chin tiknu shei minyan tfilos kaminyan akarbano. Shei tfilos b'chol yom k'neged shnei tzuidim. The chol yom shei ishkar b'musav tiknu bo tfilah shlishi k'neged kar b'musav. U'tfilah shei k'neged tamid shol bakar nekri tfilah shachar. Tfilah shei k'neged tamid shol b'nar harbayim nekri tfilah mincha. U'tfilah shei k'neged musafin nekri tfilah musafin. The chin iskinu shei adam mispel tfilah achas pola shere yivari tamid shol b'nar harbayim misakam v'ochim kal laila. And so on and so forth. And he discusses etc. The Rambam a very clear Karbano, and that's what we saw earlier, right? That Midoraita, it's once a day Shevach Bakasha Hodaya, but in terms of the actual framework, so there Chazal specifically turned to Karbanot as the basis for everything that we do. So the Rambam in Hilchot Tefillah really only talks about Karbanot and doesn't really introduce any other motifs at all. And you might say, well, this is more of an agadic motif, it's not a halachic one. Okay, but number one, that's significant that the Rambam thinks is only an agadic motif, not a halachic one. And number two, that would be significant because again, the Gemara did think that there are some halachic ramifications to this, and we might be able to think of others as well. So to say that it's not halachic at all would be significant. And another way of sort of downplaying or sidelining the significance of the role of the Avot. That being said, the Rambam does not omit the role of the Avot in its entirety from Mishneh Torah. He just puts it in a completely different context, specifically at the beginning of Perek Tet, of all places, of Hilchot Melachim, all the way at the end of Mishneh Torah in Sefer Shoftim. And the Rambam here is offering sort of a halachic history, if you will. It's a classic passage. It's really interesting in a whole range of different ways. And he writes as follows: Al shisha dvarim nitzave adam reishon, avod azar v'avirchas Hashem v'al shvuchos damim v'al gil areyos v'al gezel v'al hadinim. This is important for issues of what we were talking about last week, right, Donnie? Natural law, etc. Because the Rambam might not follow those who think that that there was no explicit tzivoy, because it does say Al shisha dvarim nitzave adam reishon. So unless that means that there was just some sort of, it was understood that these were things he was responsible in, which is a plausible reading of the Rambam, but not, but is a little bit of a reinterpretation rather than the face reading, I think. And maybe the Gemara and Sanhedrin as well. But you have that here. There's another Rambam that's relevant for this as well. In the case of the Shev, if a Gentile accepts a Shev Mitzvah B'nei Noach, not because God commanded him to do so. So there are different gersot in the Rambam about that issue. And depending how you read that Rambam, also in this context in Hilchot Melachim, that has ramifications for this discussion as well. And yeah, so six items on which Adam Rishon was commanded, in regard to which he was charged. Right? Miklal devei Torah yirel shel elu mitzaveh. Set really important lines, but leaving those aside for now. Hosev lenoach ivrim enachashem rachbasar benafsho damolo sechilu nimsu sheva mitzvos v'chin haya hadavar b'chol ha'olam ad Avraham ba'Avraham v'nitzaveh yeser aleilu b'mila v'hu hispala shachres v'yitzchak yifrish ma'aser v'hosef tfilah acheres lefnos hayom v'yakov hosef yid hanashe v'hispala arvis u'v'mitzrayim nitzaveh amram b'mitzvos esero sechaba Moshe Rabbeinu Vinishlama Torah al Yada. Okay. There's a lot to say about this Rambam. I'll just mention one thing as an aside, which I think is really important as a general matter. There's a really interesting comment that I heard Rav Lichtenstein make on multiple occasions. Say, quote, when he was learning back in the day in Chaim Berlin, so this is when he was, I don't know, like 15 or something like that, so Rav Futner gave a sicha. And a Futner said, insisted, And it's a really interesting question. Here's the question. I'll tell you how Rebbe answered. The question is, are Jews obligated in the mitzvah b'nei Noach qua b'nei Noach? In other words, do we have two sets of obligations that are built one upon the other, or do we have just one?
Meaning, are we like new and improved
b'nei
Noach, or are we
yes.
Jews?
No, meaning
no, are
Noach
we
specifically to non-Jews, or is a universal mankind commanded.
That's right.
You're part of mankind, so you're commanded through that command, and you're also a Jew, so you're commanded through the Torah.
They're two, they're just
specific as a Jew.
Right. What's the other option?
I may overlap.
The other option is I'm not, is that that's not a mankind command, that's a non-Jewish command.
It's a Gentile.
And you're a Jew. Right. That's a Gentile command, that's a Jewish command.
But there's 100%
What's the enough for you?
So I don't, that's an interesting question.
Right, because
there's 100% overlap.
What? Yeah, I mean, it's some of these issues that the Gemara talks about that it's impossible for it to, for the halacha to be treated Jew more severely than a non-Jew could be relevant to this. It goes, I don't know if it's a direct nafkamina, but it's relevant to the conversations about exactly this. Can a Gentile have a more severe punishment, which they do on occasion, or even halachot that are more severe? So if a Gentile performs an abortion, that's a chiyuv misa. It's considered ritzicha. If a Jew does, it's clearly not punished as a rotzeach. Now, there's a range of views with regards to abortion. Everything from mizrabanan to an act of murder with chiyuv misa b'dei shamayim for which there is no onesh beit din. But the bottom line is that beit din will punish a Gentile, not a Jew. If you steal less than a shavah puta, so the Jew is pater, and the Gentile is killed for it. So those are you know, pretty challenging halachot to try to grapple with and understand. In other words, right, how do we account for that, and why does that make any sense? We always assume that the target mitzvot add, right? But in this context, it's actually really interesting. Are those evidence for the notion that maybe these are two different systems? After all, if we were b'nei Noach plus, right, if we were subject to their halachot, so then why would you say such a thing? So you'd have to grapple with that. So anyhow, so Rav Chochanzin said that Rav Huttner got up and said, maybe on the basis of something halachot, I'm not sure, that these are two separate categories, and that Jews are no longer bound by the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, qua Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, rather, we happen to be bound in the same halachot on the basis of Har Sinai, essentially. And Rav Chochanzin disagreed, and the basis for his disagreement, in part, was this Rambam.
Of the process of forming a halacha.
In other words, the point is that if Mishneh Torah is a halachic work, right? Why does all this appear in a halachic work? If it's just a background, right, or it's just sort of history, so that's interesting. But why does it appear in Mishneh Torah? So on the assumption, I hope I'm reproducing his proof correctly. On the assumption that Mishneh Torah is more than just history, and rather is halacha, so then it would be the case. And just to appear to be the case. And just to add also, I don't know if Rav Lichtenstein pointed this out, but the Diyak HaLashon of V'nishlama Torah Al Yada, I think also sounds like that. It's maybe even stronger. Right? In other words, it's not like the Rambam came and said, right, that you have all these things, and then Moshe Rabbeinu came along and gave us the Torah. It says V'nishlama Torah, almost as if the Torah had been accruing, and we started off with just 6, and then we had 7, and then we had Avram and Yitzhak and Yaakov, and we had 13 or whatever it was, and then you have things like Mara and so on and so forth, the mitzvah, right, and Kiddush HaChodesh, etc., all the mitzvah that were given to Klal Yisrael prior to Matan Torah. And then you have Har Sinai, but it sounds like there's a, sort of this accruing of mitzvot, not that Sinai does away with everything that came before it, but it complements, rounds out, etc. Now how this fits with the other Ramban that I mentioned, I think is part of the conversation. This needs to be worked out and thought through. But just that point of the Nishlama Torah Al Yado, I think sounds very much like that. Anyhow, so just a sort of an aside, but an interesting one. A food for thought. Okay, but coming to our point, so a number of the Achronim point out, well, it's very nice that the Rambam left, and this discussion that we just had is actually relevant to this conversation, right? But the Rambam left out Korban, right? No, excuse me, he left out Avot entirely in Hilchot Tefillah. Karbana, 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 Karbana. So you kind of get the sense, oh, like the Rif and like the Rash. It's essentially how the Rambam paskins. And yet here in Elchem Lachem, right, seemingly out of nowhere, he tells you, right, Tfilot Avot Tikkun. Why does he say that Tfilot, that the Avot davens? He doesn't say that. What does he say? He says that they established them. They were Masake. And how does he say that? He says that these, it sounds like these were binding until Moshe Rabbeinu came along, Vinishlama Torah al Yado, just like the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach and all the other commandments. So it doesn't really just sound like, well, you know, about just sort of as an agadic afterthought, but it really sounds like it's part of things. On the other hand, it's not Milchot Tfilah. So there's a little bit of a tension here. Why is it not Nechol Tfilah if this is in fact the central part of Tfilah and the basis for Tfilah? Why doesn't the Rambam mention that in the beginning of Perek Aleph, in Halachot Hein Vav, etc.? He's framing what happened. He should have incorporated that into the context. Yeah.
Other really interesting thing is there's three mitzvot and they're all accompanied by Tfilah.
But it,
right, like Avram needs tava, right?
Mila, ruhit balal shachret. Which, by the way,
like he was commanded on Mila, and what did he do? He davened, and Yitzchak, did the mitzvah of maaser, and what did he do? He davened, and Yaakov got the mitzvah of gidal hashem. Those are the three.
Yeah,
it sounds like those are the three mitzvot that we were given.
Right.
What did they do? They davened.
Right, it's so confusing.
It's very confusing.
Because literally, you're right, it's a great deal, because every other halakha that's mentioned here includes a tzivui, right? Al shishadvar nitzave adam harishon.
And the tzivui is on the mitzvah.
Shal elu nitz, right, and then
on the tefillah. Meaning, the way he puts in tefillah here is
right.
Kind of like a hoda'ah on having a mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
I would posit. Or something, it could be. I mean, it would make sense that it would be like
mm-hmm.
the Avraham having a mitzvah.
Oh, for that mitzvah. You're suggesting that
Avraham got the mitzvah and he was so happy he dove into Hashem. Yitzchak got a mitzvah.
Kifrish maser v'hosef tzilacharet, yeah?
That's a possibility of understanding what the v'hosef is, but
yeah.
It's clear that the v'hosef isn't the mitzvah that they got. It's like their reaction to it.
No, it's only the mitzvah they got.
Right, Adam is saying.
I would say the Hosif though doesn't just mean davened.
Well, because otherwise, why does it appear here? In other words, if it's just as a thank you, it seems odd that he would, that the Rambam would mention it. Well, and also for the Yitzhak Kifrish Maser, it sounds strange as well, unless the Tfilah thinks it's Aser Asan Ulach.
But it's do you mean that it's in addition to the mitzvot?
Yes, but not necessarily tied. It could be, but I'm just saying another reading would be that it's not tied to those specific mitzvot. But what it's saying is that there are two kinds of commandments that we have, or mitzvot that we have. There's the traditional tzivoy type, and then there are the ones that the avot invented themselves. In other words, what then emerges, something really interesting we're thinking about, is that tefillah is the one mitzvah that the rabbi, the one category of mitzvot that the Rambam lists here, in which human beings were the drivers. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, it's right in Kabbalistic language, it's not itaruta dila ela, it's itaruta dila tata. It's coming not from above, rather from us. I don't see why that's so funny. So I always quote Kabbalistic metaphors for what we're doing. So the Rav did it. I mean, really. Okay. So anyhow.
He gave a class in tiny, though.
What?
He gave a whole shiur in tiny.
Yeah, one time, one summer. Okay, look, if you want to do away with Gemara, like the Rav's Milami back in Chaslavich, when he was 7 years old, we can arrange for that. Anyhow, so, yeah, I think those are really interesting to you, and maybe that's the idea, I don't know. So, but there, just quickly, because we're almost out of time. But just to finish this point up, so there seems to be some discussion as to what the Rambam actually concludes and what his position is. Take a look at the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah on the spot on Daf Mavon Beis. He quotes the his oath appears. He references Hilchot Tfilah and Omi Hilchot Tfilah on the view of Tfilo Keneged Tzmidin Tikkun. So either he just missed the Hilchot Melachim reference, or he actually felt that the Rambam, like the Rif and the Rash, simply sides with that position. The Maariv disagrees. Take a look in the back, right here, the Maariv Chayos. I don't have an source sheet, but the Maariv Chayos insists that that's not the correct reading of the Rambam. It doesn't specifically quote rejecting the Mishpat near Mitzvah, although it's kind of cool, especially with high school kids, like Vidari Kashita from the Mishpat. But he actually invokes the Nitna Torah v'Nischad Shehalacha, and he asks the seer in the Rambam and resolves it based on the Rambam in Perishan Mishnayos in Chulut. So in other words, what he's saying is as follows: he's saying that no, really the Rambam holds not Tmeidin; he really holds Avot plus Tmeidin, which is really the Avot position. Actually, he disagrees with the Riff and the Rosh, and what the Rambam is really saying is similar to one of the possible readings that we offered for the Ritva, which is that it wouldn't have been binding if not for the precedent of the Avot, because after all, it was prior to Matan Torah. And the point is that that sort of the Karbonat one is sort of giving a framework that was obligatory after Matan Torah. So remember, it's not a chiyuv minat Torah. Certainly, the details are not minat Torah. So as opposed to Brit Milah or Gid Hanasha, all you have to say is right Nitna Torah v'nischad shalach or Puravur or something like that. So then it's just at Sinai and that's it. But this is a later Takanami Rabbana. So it's not that Moshe Rabbeinu's authority at Har Sinai was binding in this regard. The point is that Chazal needed to be misakin it later on because the only prior establishment came from the Avot that was no longer binding, even if it was the original inspiration, and so therefore we required Chazal to be metaken on the basis of Korbanot. So there does seem to be some controversy within the Rambam as to how the Rambam really rules, and according to the Maariv Chayos, really, there's Machloket Harishonim, and he's breaking ranks from the Rif and the Rosh, despite the anachronism in the Rosh, at least. Inherent in that, but he's bringing ranks with at least that position and actually adopting the Avot slash Tmeidin view as opposed to those other Rishonim. Now, all this just sort of begs the question, which is, so what we're doing here is we're grappling with this question of Avot and Korbanot and what's the balance between them and what do the positions mean to begin with and are there different phases here, which is really interesting as a possibility. Are there different impetuses or sort of this is coming from us and not just from God, and is there sort of a compromise position? So I just wanted to turn your attention. I shared this, had my kids do an assignment around this, but Rabbi Sachs, in the introduction to his Sidur, we'll take a look at the second, third, fourth pages here, after the Ra'ah, has a pretty moving description about this. This is a theme he likes to elaborate. Also in his introduction to the Yom Kippur Machzor, he has a similar discussion. And essentially what he elaborates is that there are two types of worship, something that we've discussed is the spontaneous, and there's this sort of the set, permanent, ritualized kind of worship. There are different institutions that represent this. One is the scholars or the prophet, really the prophets, really even more so, versus the model of the Kohanim, the priests. The prophets are much more spontaneous, right? Here Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov would be early representatives of the prophetic tradition. Things are more spontaneous. Things come from a rush of emotion and passion, excitement in connection with God. Whereas the Kohanim, the priesthood, is ritualized, right? Max Weber has this distinction based on that as well. And that's much more routinized, ritualized, set in stone in terms of the details. And these represent not only different traditions, but different modes of relating to God, right? And we can sort of draw the lines for ourselves. You can see how that works. So his suggestion is to contextualize our discussion of Avot versus Korbanot, which I think is a very intuitive way of thinking about it, is that Tefillah Avot Tiknum is that spontaneous aspect of our Tefillah, and the Korbanot is a much more ritualized and permanent one. And essentially, when the Rambam, for example, is ruling that Tefillah Avot Tiknum, or that comrades are in the Gemara, what they're really doing is saying that you don't have to choose one or the other, that what we've done in our world is to take both of those traditions and to fuse them. Isn't that what we're doing? We're taking spirit, the kernel of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, we're marrying it to the sort of the more ritual experience of the Kohanim, institutionalized approach, and we're seeking to sort of strike a balance between them, and isn't that perhaps what the Gemara is grappling with here as well? So if you take one, if you're interested, you can take a look. See, he related to the Rambam and the Ramban as well, which I think makes a lot of sense, and he talks historically about the evolution of the synagogue after the destruction of the Second Temple, or around that time in particular, and so on and so forth. So you can take a look at that as well, but I think that that's a really helpful frame for thinking about these issues as well. I think it's a nice text to be able to point to and to work with. In addition, God willing, next time we'll begin to open up that second question, the relationship between our sugya and that of Tefillah Arvei Pirushim. Shabbat.